Hi, and welcome to The Midlife Feast, the podcast for women who are hungry for more in this season of life. I'm your host, Dr. Jen Salib Huber. I'm an intuitive eating dietitian and naturopathic doctor, and I help women manage menopause without dieting and food rules. Come to my table, listen and learn from me, trusted guest experts in women's health, and interviews with women just like you. Each episode brings to the table juicy conversations designed to help you feast on midlife. And if you're looking for more information about menopause nutrition and intuitive eating, check out the Midlife Feast community, my monthly membership that combines my no-nonsense approach that you all love to nutrition with community so that you can learn from me and others who can relate to the cheers and challenges of midlife. Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of the Midlife Feast. And so my guest today is a fellow non-diet nutritionist and fitness coach, Tracy Harper, who's from Ontario in Canada. And Tracy has a lot of work working with teens, a lot of experience working with teens and families who are maybe trying to navigate this whole diet culture, intuitive eating, eating disorder conversation as a family. And so one of the things that I really love about Tracy is, you know, she's very, I guess, astute with her language in terms of how she describes what needs to change, how we need to change it, but it's done in such a compassionate and sensitive way that I think any parent who is maybe feeling like something needs to change, maybe they themselves need to change, but they know that they need to support their kid, their teen, will really take a lot of comfort from this conversation because we kind of cover the gamut. We cover our own parenting experiences, being deep into diet culture, how we repaired some of that with ourselves and our kids. But she gives us some really practical tools for anybody who might be starting to think like, I think we need to maybe work on this as a family instead of just trying to maybe kind of work on or help one person. So have a listen, and I know that you'll enjoy this conversation. Welcome, Tracy, to the Midlife Feast.
Thank you, Jen, so much for having me. Excited to be here.
I'm excited that you're here too. You're in the growing list of my internet friends, as I call it, people that I feel like I have really gotten to know. And I know that we would be friends, and I sometimes have to remind myself that we haven't actually met because we've had so many different interactions over the years. But you are a nutritionist who works in the non-diet, health at every size space. But why don't you tell us a little bit more about maybe just kind of how you work and how you get into this work?
Sure. Yes, you definitely are one of my internet friends. One of the good things about Instagram, right? Our meeting. So thank you for having me. My work. So I, as you said, I'm a nutritionist. I also have a background in fitness. I did fitness coach, or I worked at a gym for many, many years as a fitness instructor. So my work, like you said, is from a non-diet perspective. A lot of my work in the past year has been with teens and families, helping them with either eating disorders or disordered eating and their relationships with food and their bodies. So that's really been a shift in my work in the last year because I joined another practice as well and working alongside therapists as the nutritionist there. So.
And you have a lot of experience like with the athletic side of working with teens as well. Am I remembering that correctly? You've coached.
You are. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, good memory. Wow. Yeah. So I did that about 5 or 6 years. I'm not doing that anymore. And but yeah, I worked with a local figure skating club and I loved it. And I did their fitness piece mostly. Like they're required to do off-ice training as well as the on-ice. I actually don't even know how to skate, which they thought was quite hilarious. but yeah, I did the off-ice and loved it because it also gave me a chance to work with kids and also give them some other little nuggets other than just fitness, right? Because we ended up talking a lot about bodies, talking a lot about food, things like that, as you can well imagine in a sport like figure skating, right?
Yes. Oh my goodness. Yes. So that kind of is a good segue into what we're going to be talking about today, which is trying to support families and teens, and especially families kind of with kids, I guess, who might be in their own messy middle of maybe having a teen who is struggling, I guess, you know, for lack of a better word, with either food mm-hmm. or body image or some combination of both. I know I hear from a lot of parents that they're worried about their mm-hmm. kids, you know, even if they don't have a, you know, quote unquote eating disorder.
Yes.
They definitely see things that they recognize as maybe not on that spectrum of healthy behaviors and thoughts that we want for our kids. But one of the things that we were talking about just before we hit record was that, you know, often it brings up that this is actually more of like a family circumstance that might be happening, not intentional, no. You know, not something that parents ever tried to instill in their kids, but just because we're all realizing diet culture is everywhere. So it's really hard to keep it out of your house, even if you try, mm-hmm. right? So what are some of the things that you see in your work around teens and families and body image? Let's start with that.
Okay. So I think interesting point you brought up first that I want to talk a little bit more about, and that is the piece of how can you keep it out of the house for your children, right? It's impossible to keep all of diet culture out. You know that, right? Once they leave our children leave our houses, it's everywhere. But I think one of the first, and please, I'm a parent. I said a lot of these things in the past. I did a lot of, you know, not using neutral language when it came to food and bodies. I hope that I know better and I'm trying to do better. So in no way am I blaming or, you know, wanting people to feel badly if they say these things. I'm just trying to help. Parenting is hard, right? Parenting is really hard. And so in terms of the work that I do, I try to help parents possibly work on their own relationship a little bit first before before dealing with what some of the issues they might see in their children. So let's say your example that they see some behaviors in their children that they think are, you know, maybe a little bit disordered. Maybe they see they're, you know, really concerned with their food, really concerned with their exercise, not wanting to eat with the family, any kind of little red flags. And I'll help them. I will get a sense of what the household is like. So how do you talk about bodies in your household? How do you talk about food? Do you place certain foods, you know, on a higher level, like is broccoli better than cookies, or do you speak neutrally about food? So I try to get a real sense of what's happening in the house, because then maybe changing that messaging can help the child as well, right? It depends on where the child is with these behaviors, but I think I really think it's important to get an understanding of, like, you know, what's your eating situation? Like, do you eat together a lot? Do people talk about different sizes of bodies positively or negatively? Do people talk about food positively or negatively? So it's really getting the full picture helps me understand what these children are growing up with and what's the messages they're hearing. Because once they leave the house, they're going to hear all the diet culture messages and all the difficult things that we can't protect them from.
Yeah. And something that you said about you know, how the language that we use, mm-hmm. even with adults, and I work almost exclusively with adults, but even with adults who are well on their way to on their intuitive eating journey. So they're like not new to this concept,
yeah,
are still shocked to discover the layers mm-hmm. of diet culture language. Mm-hmm. You know, that reflex to say, that's good, that's healthy, you know, and to feel like that's neutral. Like a lot of mm-hmm. people are surprised, you know, when I say, like, actually healthy isn't a neutral word, because can we apply the definition of healthy to every single human on the planet in, you know, to describe one way of eating? We can't.
No.
Right? Healthy is always going to be relative.
I love your example. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
You just did an example of your nephew, I think, the other day. About the healthy and not healthy. Yeah. So I love that. I love that the way you approached it, right? Because did he not say popcorn's not healthy or something like that? Was that the example?
So the funny thing, and I'll give a little bit more backstory because I think I shared that in my newsletter, but my husband is a popcorn fiend. So mm-hmm. he makes popcorn. popcorn every night. He's on his like third whirly pop. Like he loves popcorn and it's just his thing. And we almost always have a bowl of half eaten popcorn on our couch left over from like the night before. It's kind of just this funny thing. And so whenever he's come over, they're always like, there's always a bowl of popcorn in your house. Why? So as we're walking through Costco, I'm super excited because I haven't been in a Costco in like 4 years. Even though it was in France, it had, you know, some things from home, as home. I would call them.
Yeah.
And was this like Boom Chicka Pop, which we love.
It's delicious. And,
and so then, you know, Max says, but it's not healthy to eat popcorn every day, right? And so I gave him the answer that like, well, you know, actually, you know, corn is a plant. It has lots of fiber. It's really satisfying. And like, you know, we're trying to get more plants on our plate or, you know, something like that.
Right.
And it was so hilarious to see him whip his head around and say, Mom, Johnson, popcorn is healthy and we can eat it every day. And then the funnier thing, which is even funnier if my sister actually listens to these because she does now, is she texted me afterwards and she said, I never said it wasn't healthy, just for the record.
And the interesting thing is you never said to him it's healthy.
No.
You said like it contains fiber, it can be whatever, right. So it's interesting that he turned that and was like, oh, but it's healthy, I could eat it, right? And then so it's interesting the word.
We're kind of getting off on an aside, but I don't know what you find when you have that discussion with people, but I find it a hard one to sometimes really convey why the language is so important, because we've just been, you know, surrounded with positive messaging about the word healthy and that healthy is always a good thing to be working towards. But there's a difference, right, between healthy and health promoting. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how trying to.
Yeah, that's what I do too.
Yeah. So let's get back to that. So you work on the language, you kind of figure out how everyone talks to each other and about each other. What else? What else do you see?
So I also, just about the health promoting behaviors, I do the same thing as you in terms of health. Health for you is very different than what my definition of health might be, right? And I'd find it harder when I'm working with teens and kids on health promoting behaviors, right? I find probably the midlife group is a little bit, just because of age and maturity, they're like, oh, sleep is important, but try tell a 16-year-old like sleep is important, or an 18-year-old, right? It's more difficult conversation. But you know, when I'm talking to the family, if it's with a parent and a child, like I have that conversation. If it's just with a child, you know, I'm trying to explain to them the concept of like, how sleep makes you feel. So I ask a lot of questions about like when you don't get enough sleep, how do you feel? When you go to school without eating breakfast, how do you feel? And that, I feel like that's more concrete and they're able to answer like, oh, well, I noticed when I was in my first and second period that I was losing concentration, you know, things like that. So getting them to really, because that's the whole idea of the journey, is to get them to, as they grow, to become, you know themselves and know their internal cues, right? How their body feels, how they feel about hunger, how they feel when they don't have enough sleep, how they feel when they're full, all those kinds of things. So I do a lot of talking about those kinds of things to get them to be more intuitive in their choices. So yeah, I talk about health promoting behaviors like sleep. I talk to them about, you know, who they hang out with, like what are the messages that they're hearing from friends. I talk to them about connecting with good people and how they feel about after they're with certain people. You know, do they feel uplifted and good, or do they feel like their energy's been drained? I do talk about sleep. What else? Time outside, you know, are you getting away from your phone? Are you taking breaks from your phone and your computer? And are you spending time outside and things like that? So I don't know if that answers the question, but
yeah. So one of the things that you just touched on too, like media. And social media plays a big role in all of our lives. Yeah. You know, I think I'm of the mind that we can't protect everyone from the harms of it. So we really need to work on awareness, taboo, because it's here to stay. Like, unless we're going to really completely remove ourselves from society, it's hard to ask an adult, let alone a teen, not to use those tools, I guess, for communication. What are some of the things when you're talking to teens, especially, what do you talk to them about media and media literacy?
So I always ask older and younger clients, I ask them to do sort of a deep dive into their social media, right? And then I ask them to come back to me and tell me if there are accounts that they're following that don't make them feel great, or that they walk away and they feel like they're comparing, right? So maybe a little social media detox. Teens, it's harder. I find there's a lot of that like FITSPO. Do you know what I mean when I say that? Like FITSPO, yeah. Messaging and for boys and girls, right? But I really ask them to take a look at their social media. So I would say like maybe in one of our appointments, okay, let's take it next week, come back to me and have a little bit of a list. And, you know, have you gone through your social media, your TikTok, your Instagram, whatever it is you use, and come up with a list of maybe ones that aren't making you feel good about yourself, but making you compare and feel less than. And why are they, right? Is it because the size of their body is different than yours? Is it because you think they're doing, you know, better things to look a certain way? Is it because of the food they're eating? You're comparing yourself, whatever it is. Why are you walking away from that account and not feeling great? And then it, you know, gives them some time to reflect. And just encourage them to do that regularly and like really scrub your social media, right? I talk a lot at ad nauseum about it not being real and it being so easy to change your appearance and change the shape of your body and make your waist smaller and all of those things that we know can be done. So when you're comparing yourself to someone on social media, that might not be what the person actually really looks like, right?
Yeah. And it's so important too that I think people, when I'm talking about body image with adults, you know, I show them kind of this three-part model of how we get to a place of body dissatisfaction. Mm-hmm. And it's the comparison and the messaging that we receive from family, from friends, yeah. and from yeah. the media, right? Yeah. We're not born feeling yeah. that way.
We're not.
And when we, I think, can recognize that, you know, especially social media, which, you know, you can only see someone's good side forever and all of their mm-hmm. good habits and all of the things that are working well. And it's very easy to think like, wow, they've got it all together.
All together. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, so I love some of the messaging, especially that turns it around that says like, hey, you know what? You don't have to like completely eliminate social media from your life, but curate your feed. Like
yes.
Diversify it, look for representation, look for bodies that look like your own doing the things that you want to do. You don't mm-hmm. just want to see the people at the top of that body hierarchy ladder. Like yes. you want to see all bodies, all shapes, all sizes, all people doing things mm-hmm. and being inspired by what they're doing, not what they look like.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would also encourage parents to have very open conversations about what accounts their kids are following and what is making them feel good and what, you know, yeah. and are there diverse bodies on there? Are there, you know, accounts that are looking at food just because of the pure joy of food, not because it's a diet or something like that. So I think parents are often hesitant, or at least some of the ones I've talked to ask their kids about their social media and what they're looking at, right? Because they think they won't tell them, or they think they're, you know, not going to tell them the truth. But I think it's like getting to know your kids' friends, right? So your kids' friends come into your house and you want to know a little bit about them. Who are they? You know, how did you meet? You know, those kinds of things. What do you have in common? Same thing with social media, right? Like, so what are the accounts that you're following? What's lighting you up these days? What does your For You page look like, right? Is it full of, you know, mine, it was funny the other day, I was looking on my Instagram. I don't know if that's called For You on Instagram, but you know, the page that-
The Explore page.
Explore page, yeah. Mine was full of puppies because my son and I, we just send like dog videos back and forth to each other. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's like all dogs.
I know. My oldest daughter is the only one on Instagram. And the other two can, but they've never asked, which is funny.
Oh, that's a good thing.
And they just turned 14. So, but anyway, but my oldest daughter and I, we literally just send each other cat videos with the occasional plant video thrown in because she's big into plants. But yeah, it is a nice way to kind of just have that line of connection into what they're seeing, even if, you know, especially with older kids, like my oldest is almost 17.
Yeah.
I can't realistically tell her what to follow.
No.
But I can continue to kind of insert the balance that she may not be getting.
Yes. Right? Or with the older ones, I would say even sharing accounts with them. Like, oh, have you seen this account? I love this person's messaging. Or, you know, look at her approach to movement. It's so positive. And it's not just about changing your body. It's about finding joyful movement, you know, things like that. And maybe they won't follow right away. But at least I always think like you're planting the seed or you're continuing to model, right? Someone said to me a long time ago when I was frustrated that my kids wouldn't eat like broccoli or something, they were like, which now I realize is just so ridiculous. But she said, like, just keep modeling, right? You know, variety and all those things. And now they're like, you know, 21 and 19, and one of them doesn't like broccoli still. But you know, I just kept modeling and trying to show, you know, the approach to food, not just from a restrictive place, but from a place of abundance and all those kinds of things that I know you talk about with women in midlife as well. So I think it's the same message.
And let's circle back to modeling, because that's kind of where we started. And I think that's really helpful, because modeling doesn't just mean, at least the way that I view it, but modeling isn't just modeling positive behaviors. It's also modeling how do you repair. And like that repair and reconciliation, if you feel like you've done something wrong or you feel like you've made a mistake, not something wrong, that's wrong, right? You know, I mean, you said at the beginning, like, you know, there are lots of things that you said to your kids that you would go back and change. I also have a long list of those, you know, and being able to say like, hey, I was wrong. That's also, right?
Yes.
And so parents, well, I just want to get it right. You don't have to get it right, but admit when you get it wrong.
Yes.
And like show them, this is how you, you know, this is what you do. If you make a mistake, you learn from it. You try and do better. Like you said at the beginning, like, you know, I try and do better. So what are some of the modeling behaviors, I guess, when you're talking to families about food and healthy body image?
I would say, you know, not talking about your own body in a negative way would be one of the big ones, right? I think a lot of people, and again, I did these things, Jen. So this is in no way to make people feel guilty or shameful for things that they say. It's to just help us all do a little bit better in helping our children have a more positive relationship with food in their bodies, right? So I think it would be taking a look at how you talk about your body and other people's bodies. So not just yours, but, you know, even little, it's so insidious. I mean, if you think about the little comments, right? Like, oh, my, you know, my pants are so tight today. I really need to stop eating cookies. Or, oh, I hate the way my arms look. Like, we might think they're so innocent, and we might think, and I do get pushback on this sometimes, we might think they're just like sharing comments of how we're feeling that day. But for a child, and I'm sure you can remember when you were younger and heard messaging like this, for a child to hear over and over their parent feeling unhappy with their body, and then what if their body is like their parents, right? And then they start to feel, oh, is this normal behavior? My mom hates her arms. My dad hates his stomach. Like, is this just that I have arms like my mom, so therefore my arms are bad, right? It's that whole like, that you might think your messaging is innocent and you're just talking about your own body, but kids are sponges. They take in everything. They love you. They think you're the best. And then you're putting yourself down. And then they are like, oh, I should feel the same way. Right. And I see time after time after time, children grow up with messaging, and not just from parents, right? From aunts or uncles, or maybe their grandparents have a huge influence on their life. And the way, you know, food is viewed or talked about, or bodies are talked about, right? It's that messaging. So helping parents understand that even the things that you think are such simple phrases or not a big deal can be a big deal if kids hear them over and over and over again.
Yeah, it really is important to talk about the extended family too, because I know like in my family, my immediate family, there wasn't any like negative body talk. But, you know, at certain family gatherings, even if we hadn't seen these people in like a year, the people who weren't there were talked about.
Right. Yes.
So, or, you know, and it didn't really register with me how normalized that was. And now it's like insane for me to think about being like literal dinner conversation. right? And you know, that's
it's hard to do this work and live in the world.
Oh, yeah.
It's so hard.
So my daughter is, my oldest is in IB, is doing IB, and she's doing French. And in having grown up in Northern New Brunswick, French is kind of one of my skill sets. And as I'm going through this with her, and they're doing this section on like health and identity now. And I'm telling you, it like takes all of my willpower. Like we laugh about how ridiculous some of it is. So we can like call it out and laugh at it. But I'm just like, oh my goodness, it is so normalized that like using this language is like in the curriculum.
So it's interesting though, because you can laugh about it because your daughter hears the messaging from you, right? But all of those kids who don't have that messaging from their parents, I feel like are the ones that aren't safe, right? So is the messaging things like counting? What's the messaging she's hearing?
Just around like the language of how people describe their diets and like a lot of it is like role playing, right? Because you're like role playing learning conversations and it's like, I want to, you know, I want to get smaller, so I'm going to start a diet.
Oh, dear.
On the very top level surface, fairly neutral language.
Yes, yes.
I can't see that language as anything but harmful.
Exactly. You know, that's why I said it's hard to do this work and unhear things.
But it is everywhere, and I think it really is about being able to expose it, because I think that so much of it goes unnoticed, right? That it's just there in the background. It's operating all the time. It's being reinforced at home, at school, in healthcare conversations with friends. And I always describe, you know, intuitive eating or kind of seeing the problems of diet culture, like those 3D images, those posters from the 90s, whatever they're called, where like you stare at them for a long time and then this 3D image pops out. And even if it takes you a long time to see it, once you see it, you can't unsee it. And that is what diet culture is like. And as soon as you see how much of diet culture is everywhere, you can't unsee it. So you see it in everywhere, including curriculums.
Yes.
But, you know, getting kind of back to the language, and you mentioned that sometimes you get some pushback from parents. What are some of the ways that maybe, like, do you find that parents push back because they feel like they've done something wrong? Or is it that,
I think sometimes it's a defense mechanism. They're worried that maybe they've done something wrong, particularly if they've come to us and said they're worried about some behaviors in their children. I think sometimes it's like, oh no, was this me? Right? And there's so many reasons why children develop eating disorders or disordered eating, right? It's not just your home environment. You know, that can be a part of it, but there's a lot of different reasons, biological, social, psychological, you know, social media, all those things. So I think sometimes that's the pushback, but I also think we live in a very fat phobic society and a lot of parents are fearful of their children's bodies changing and they want to try and control that because they think that that's protecting them, whereas that's probably not protecting them, right? Your kids should be able to grow into the bodies they're meant to grow into, but for a lot of people that's very hard to watch. And so I think that's part of the pushback as well, right? Is thinking, if I control their food and I control their movement and, you know, I make them eat certain things and I don't let them have certain things, then I'm doing them a service, right? I get it.
Yeah. And especially anybody who's come from their own background of disordered eating. You know, I tried to control my kids' sugar intake like within an inch of all of our lives because I thought, well, if you just don't develop a taste for it, they won't want it. And I've shared before the Fruit Loops story with one of my kids where she had Fruit Loops. Have you heard this one before?
I think so.
And it was like primary or grade one, and they were doing a craft in the classroom with Fruit Loops. And a friend of mine was volunteering as a parent in the classroom. And she was texting me these pictures and saying, oh my goodness, it's so cute. She, you know, your daughter keeps running off with these bowls of Fruit Loops and eating them in the corner and giggling. And like, I still.
And you're like, it's not cute. It's.
That was actually like, in hindsight, it was one of my first moments of like, Mm-hmm. This may not be working the way I thought it was working.
Yes. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. That's exactly what I was saying, right? We think that we're protecting them. And I had a similar moment with my kids where we used to, the last day of school, we always went for, I always took them for ice cream. It became a thing till, you know, till they finished high school. And at one point they asked me why I never had ice cream with them. And I always made up an excuse. It was like, oh, I'm full. I don't feel like it. Right. And that was a huge moment for me. Like, how do I explain this disordered behavior to them? Cause I wasn't eating it cause I was on my quote unquote bad list. Right. So same kind of thing as you. We think we're protecting them by, you know, teaching them that certain foods aren't as good as others, or it's just going to backfire in the end, right? It's more about that neutral language.
All parents are doing, most parents.
Yeah.
This is coming from a good place.
Yes. It, oh, 100%. You know, yeah.
And we're just doing the best that we can with the information that we have at the time. Like, I really believe that of most parents.
Me too.
And two of the things that I share, I'm sure you do the same, that I think takes a lot of the burden off of parents to try and fix everything, is that genetics are the largest determinant of what we look like.
Yep.
And it's too late to change that. They're here.
Exactly. They're here to stay. Can't go back and pick a new pile of genetics.
You know, and, you know, one of the things that, you know, I see in like my family's genetics is, you know, we're built like Scots, right? Mm-hmm. We're, you know, brick shit houses. Like,
you know, like, my dad's Scottish, so I'm laughing. Yes, so is he. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Hips and thighs, and, you know, like, we are not small people. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Mm-hmm. That's my
genetics, that's okay. Right? But that's hard for a lot of people to accept, the genetic piece. Very hard.
Yeah, and it's not like I accepted that for 47 years. Right. I've accepted that for about 10. Mm-hmm. 37, we're not accepting of that. But knowing that, right? And just being able to look around, and genetics aren't a perfect predictor. It's not like all families have the same mix. You're always going to get, you know, some unique mixes. But if you look at like bigger extended family, you can see patterns of what people need, whether it's height, whether it's hips, whether it's round cheeks or not, like, you can see these patterns. Mm-hmm. And there's only so much you can do to influence what that looks like, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, and I do talk about that a lot too. Yeah.
The second thing that I find really helpful is reminding parents, especially of like tween girls, mm-hmm. that their body fat percentage has to almost double in order for them to start menstruating.
To start having, exactly.
Right? And so if I knew that.
Mm-hmm. I did not know that it had to double.
Yeah. It almost has to double. And actually it's in the like lead up, the year leading up to
before,
that first.
Right.
So if you think about that, that's 9, 10, 11. Mm-hmm. That is the peak of when we start to talk about girls' bodies changing. It's often when people will say, that's the first time that somebody commented on my body was when I was 10.
Yes.
And the age at which we, you know, girls start dieting is 12.
Yeah.
Right? That's the average age. So I think just, you know, when we give parents information that reassures them, it gives them confidence to just be like, hey, we're doing okay.
We're doing okay.
Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And we don't have to like intervene and fix this.
Yes.
This is just a thing that's happening. Right.
And that's where the problems, I think, can come up. Exactly what you said is trying to intervene and fix it. Right. And then kids feel that control, their parent trying to control their food and their body. And then, you know, you see examples like kids hiding food and feeling shameful for eating certain foods. Right. And leading to those kinds of behaviors. So, I mean, it's hard. Like you said, it's hard to be a parent. It's hard to, you know, you think you're doing the best and you think you're protecting and you think all of these things. And I'm not saying that, you know, you're not doing your best. It's just being very mindful of the language you use. And if you're not sure, then ask someone, right? Ask for help. Yeah.
Yeah. So as we wrap up, because I feel like we could talk.
But I could.
What kind of parting advice would you give to a parent who might be listening to this and think like, oh, I recognize myself in all of those pieces? Because I feel like everything we talked about isn't unique to you and I.
No.
It's our personal lived experience, but we obviously hear really similar stories. And there's so much guilt that comes up with this. Like when that veil gets lifted, when their like 3D image pops out and they're like, there's so much guilt. There's so much fear. There's so much like urgency to like, what can I do to fix this? So can you maybe share some advice for any parents who might be listening to this now?
Good question. First off, I would say give yourself some grace and give yourself some compassion, right? I think the message through this chat has been that parenting is hard and there are so many layers to it. And we're really just trying to do the best we can. So show yourself some compassion. And you said this before, and then this is what happened with me, and I think probably happened with you. If you were stuck in that diet culture messaging, it's okay to say to your children, I've shifted my thoughts. This is what I noticed I was doing. This is what I noticed maybe I was putting on you. And to be honest and vulnerable and open with your children, right? And, you know, it's going to be when they're probably a little bit older that you're having that conversation with them. But I certainly went back to my kids. I now have nieces who live very close by, and I'm constantly trying to give them that message, that food, bodies are diverse, food is neutral, although food is awesome, all those things. So I think my advice would be, you know, treat yourself with some kindness. It's okay to admit if you made some mistakes, and it's okay to try a new approach towards food and bodies in our house. And here's how I think we should go about it. And then give them some examples of how you're going to do that.
Yeah, I love that. That's really great advice.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for this conversation. Oh. It's been lovely. We Thank will put the links. Me. To the places where you can be found. You're in Ontario, right? In Canada?
That's correct. Yes. Yep.
So I'll put those links in, but I am eager to hear, what do you think is the missing ingredient in midlife?
I knew you were going to ask me this, so I thought about it. So I would have said, before I met people like you, I would have said education, because I approached my midlife not knowing what the hell was going on, to be quite honest. Now thank goodness for people like you are educating us. And, I would say like connection and community, right? I felt very alone as I approached perimenopause and didn't have a clue what was going on. And, and now I've connected with you, with a lot of other people and just my friends, and we all talk about it. And I hope people have that support. Right. I hope people have that connection to be vulnerable about how they're feeling and how difficult it can be. Not that it's difficult for everybody, but it's difficult for a lot of women. Midlife can be a really, really hard time of life. So,
spending time with people where you can feel seen.
Oh, it's so important. Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Thank you so much, Tracy.
Thanks for having me, Jen. I hope one day we meet in person.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Midlife Feast. For more non-diet health, hormone, and general midlife support, click the link in the show notes to learn how you can work and learn from me. And if you enjoyed this episode and found it helpful, please consider leaving a review or subscribing, because it helps other women just like you find us and feel supported in midlife.